Hi, everybody. Welcome to Core Light's Spiritual Weather Report. It is December 11th, 2022, and this is Brad. And boy, where did the year go? Right? It's amazing. It's the end of the year already. I'm calling in today from Taos, New Mexico, where I'm visiting for a little while. And it's just a beautiful, quiet little place here. I love this area. And so anyway, I welcome you. I welcome everybody who's new to Core Light, and welcome to all of our longtime Core Light friends as well. We have some power days coming up here, don't we? This is a window of opportunity coming up. Tomorrow is 12/12, December 12th. And of course, the solstice is coming up, which is December 21st. So we've got a window between 12/12 and 12/21, that's very powerful. And then of course there's Christmas and Hanukkah and New Year's. And even if you're not Christian or Jewish, this is still a very powerful time for mystics, for people who are interested in building their light. This is a time of year when it's ripe for that. And the pagans knew about that. They knew that the veils between the worlds were much thinner around the time of the solstice, and shamans as well. In any case, I don't want to get ahead of myself. We're going to talk about this today. What a powerful opportunity this window offers. So we'll get into that later. And for those of you who are new, every month I tune in on what's happening in the collective consciousness, and I'm always shown a few themes to talk about on these calls. And so this month, the themes are, we're going to do a little bit of a follow-up on the topic of detachment, spiritual detachment from last month, just briefly, but a few really important things came up, so we'll touch on that. The next topic is clearing approval and disapproval. And I know that's going to be a revisiting for some of you, but there's some new insights and some important information about that's coming through, and especially as it relates to our holiday traditions. This was very interesting. Anyway, the next topic is, do holiday traditions serve our awakening? And the next topic is, as I mentioned, the upcoming power dates, the portal that's opening. And the next topic is how to approach the holidays as a mystic. And lastly, what inspires you? So for anybody who's new to these calls, I start by offering a guided meditation, and then I speak about the prevailing energies that are affecting us and also about the spiritual principles that are most helpful for us right now. And then there's time for questions and answers, and we close the session with a very brief guided meditation or a prayer or whatever we have time for. And if you need to leave before the call ends, you can always listen to the recording later. We do send out the link to our email list, and it's also posted on YouTube. Before we get started with our guided meditation, I just wanted to let you know a few quick little housekeeping things. And I've mentioned this before, but it feels like it's important to mention again. And that is just to update you, the learning management system that Core Light's been building for a long time is going very well. And we are going to be ready in early 2023 with that. This is an online system that allows us to offer our courses. So sometime in early 2023, I'm going to be offering the Spiritual Warrior Training Course. And I'm super excited. It's just such a beautiful site, and I promise it's going to be worth the wait. It'll be very user-friendly and a nice way to take the courses. So there are some new little videos using some archival footage of Leslie that's never been seen before. And so even if you've been around for a long time and you've taken that course, there are some new aspects to it. And I've been having a lot of fun with the project, and I hope you enjoy it. So I'm excited about it, and it means this whole project means that, you know, all of our courses, Core Light's many, many courses, will be re-presenced online, and they're going to have a new life. So thank you for your patience with this. I know it's been a long time coming. And another thing I just wanted to mention, I did mention once before, that I've been invited very kindly by a really lovely group in London who run a foundation there, who discovered the Marriage of Spirit book. And I've been invited by them to come to London in January to record the audiobook of the Marriage of Spirit. And so I'm also super excited about that. So that'll be coming sometime in 2023. And then after I go to London in January, I'm going to go to South Africa. So I'm really very excited to be going back there to be with my beloved Leslie. And I just love South Africa as well. So to return there feels like home to me. All right. Without further ado, let's go ahead and start our guided meditation for today. So I invite you to get comfortable and relax and close your eyes. Take a few long, slow, deep, cleansing breaths. And just let go. Breathing in all the light and the life force that surrounds you. And breathing out any tension that you might be holding on to in the body. Breathing in love. And breathing out stress. Breathing in this present moment and breathing out any worries about the past or the future. Just letting go and relaxing. And the breathing, as always, is so important. It's foundational to the enlightening of our consciousness. The deep relaxation that comes from breathing. And sometimes we forget this. We get so busy and we forget how important relaxation is. So I invite you as you breathe to let go and use this call, this 2 hours, as an opportunity to just relax and be present. I know sometimes we need to multitask during these calls, and that's fine too. But as much as you're able, just take this time to breathe and relax and give yourself over to your spiritual journey. The precious gift when we have time together, I know it's a little awkward that you can't see each other, but I know who you are. I can see your names and I see you calling in, and I just want you to know it's such a delight to be in a community, and I invite you to tune into that field of love as you breathe that we create. We create this field of love together. And there are people from all over the world who call in live, and many hundreds who tune in later from all over the world. So there is a beautiful inner connection that we all share. And I wish we could be in the same room physically together and see each other and, you know, look in each other's eyes and give hugs and all that, but we have to be okay with this technology that allows us to at least be together virtually. And it's an opportunity. It's an opportunity to feel rather than see and touch. Feel the feel of love, to feel each other's hearts. And to feel Leslie. Leslie is surrounding us As you breathe and relax, let me just share this little piece with you about Leslie. She said to us long, long ago, decades ago, she said, I can see the end of my life. And in those times, I won't be with you physically, but I'll be with you inwardly, and we'll actually be closer than ever before, even closer than when I'm with you physically. And I know that this is true. I talk to so many people, and I hear from so many people who say the same thing. They all say, I feel Leslie in the room with me. She teaches me on the dream plane at night. She's over my shoulder and things like that. And personally, I feel Leslie and I have merged so much. We are two bodies, but one heart, one essence. So all I need to do is close my eyes and tune in, and she's right there inside me. And I invite you to do the same, especially if you've been around Core Light for a long time. And if you're new, I invite you to tune in on that energy that Leslie surrounds us with. It's a beautiful field of love. And this may be the main thing about these calls, is this energy transmission. I know we do a lot of talking on these calls, but the energy transmission and the light that's available to us to receive when we breathe and get quiet and relax, it's profound. Probably more so than words. In fact, I'm sure of that. So again, I just invite you to breathe. Just breathe and let go. Receive. Go yin. Yin being the feminine principle, the receptive principle. Just letting go and relaxing. Receiving the energy, the light. Oh. So as we always do on these calls, let's start with a muscular relaxation first, and I invite you to feel and visualize a warm liquid pouring over the top of your head like honey. And every muscle that it touches relaxes and melts those muscles and all the tension we're holding on to in the physical body. Feel the honey pouring over your scalp and relaxing all the muscles of your scalp and your head. Feel it pouring over your forehead and your eyebrows, down into your eye sockets. Just relaxing all the many, many tiny little muscles surrounding the eyes. Relaxing your eyelids and your eyeballs. So much that the eyeballs just fall back into the sockets, letting go. And feeling the warm honey pouring over your temples, your ears, your nose, cheeks, and mouth. Over the back of your head, over your jaw, and the back of the tongue. And just pause for a moment and focus on the back of the tongue, just relaxing that whole area. And you'll notice a whole region of the body relax when you relax the back of the tongue, back of the head and the neck and the shoulders and the jaw, they all relax. So just remembering your breathing and feeling this deep warmth and blissful energy relaxing your whole head, neck, and shoulders region. Feeling the honey continuing to pour down your arms, down to your hands and your fingertips, relaxing all the muscles. exploring over your torso, your chest, your upper back, right over your shoulders and down the body, relaxing all the muscles, the diaphragm, stomach, lower back. And let's just pause and take a few long, slow, deep breaths down into the diaphragm, filling the lungs up full with air and then releasing any tension, especially in the diaphragm area, breathing out the tension. We hold a lot of tension in the diaphragm area, so to just pause and take a few long, slow, deep breaths all the way down into the diaphragm, releasing the tension there with the exhale. And let's continue to feel the honey pouring down over the lower back and the stomach, down over the hips, the pelvic region, front and back, buttocks, psoas muscles in the front and the genitals, pouring down the legs, relaxing the upper legs, front and back, lower legs, front and back, all the way down to the ankles, feet, and toes. Just feeling a warm, sweet wave of energy flowing from head to toes and fingertips, washing you clean, clear of any tension. And I'll be quiet for a few moments, and I invite you to use this time to just scan your body again from head to toes and breathing light into any areas where you still might be holding on to any tension and breathing out that stress that we hold in the body. So just feeling this deep peace entering the body, which is natural after the muscular relaxation. We open the door for deep peace to enter the body. And now I invite you to put your attention right in the middle of your head. If you've been around Coralite for any period of time, you know this area. It's called the Cave of Brahman. And if you're new, the way to find it is you draw an invisible line from your third eye, the point between and slightly above the eyebrows, straight back into the center of your head. You draw an invisible line between the ears and where those two invisible lines cross is a magical, mystical place known in ancient Sanskrit as the Cave of Brahman. And Brahman is one of the names of God. And so just feel that area and take a moment to, it takes a little time to find it sometimes. So just relax and take your time. And it's okay if this is not your thing and you don't feel your body like this, you don't feel your subtle body, that's okay. You can just imagine it, visualize it, and set the intention that one day you would like this experience and it will come. And for now, I just invite you to relax. And this is not a doing, this is just a letting go and a feeling. Nothing to do here. So feel. What does it feel like right there, right in the center of the head? It's the place where the pineal, pituitary, and hypothalamus reside. You know when you find this place because you feel a slight shift in consciousness. Thoughts stop, and there's a little expansion of the energy in the head. You feel your cranium expand just a little bit. Just letting go, just relaxing. We can continue the breathing. This is helpful. This is a mystical place where we feel our connection with the cosmos, with the all that is. And can feel it expanding. Just by putting your attention there, you notice that there's this sense of expansion of the head, cranium. And even if you're not feeling it, you can just visualize a beautiful bright light, like a miniature sun, right in the center of your head. And feel it glowing brightly, like a radiant sun. And feel that beautiful, warm, radiant light expanding a little bit, filling up your cranium and expanding beyond the skin, beyond the head. You can give this light a color if you like. I see it as a golden white light. A brilliant sun. And feel it filling you up with this beautiful energy. As the sun radiates and expands, feel it filling up your body, your whole physical body and your aura with light. And again, this is not a doing, this is just a feeling and a letting go. And as you do this, I invite you to feel the opening of the crown chakra, which sits on the top of the head like a crown that a king or a queen would wear. It's also known as the thousand-petaled lotus. And so you can feel it like a flower on the top of your head, opening up and out, petal by petal, unfurling, opening wide, sort of like a satellite dish, receiving the beautiful cosmic energy, the universal energy that flows down from above, from the celestial realm. So I invite you to welcome that energy into your crown, into your body, like you're wearing a satellite dish on your head and like a funnel and just receiving it. The tip of the funnel is the cave of Brahman, the skinny point. And so let's follow that skinny point of the funnel. Let's take the energy of the cave of Brahman, take this beautiful sun and draw it down through the body, down the center of the body, slowly bringing the cave of Brahman energy all the way down to the root chakra, which is at the base of the spine. And feel how when we put our attention at the root chakra, it just naturally relaxes and open. And then let's drop our grounding cord down into the earth and bring that energy from the cave of Brahman all the way down into the earth, down to the center of the earth, connecting it with the core of the earth, feeling this energy commingling with the earth. Just pause there for a moment and feel, what does this feel like in your body? The beautiful mix of the earth energy and the star energy. And let's draw it back up into the body through the soles of the feet, all the way up, filling the body all the way back up, up to the crown. And feel how your body, your physical body, is the midpoint between heaven and earth. Feel this beautiful connection that you have in your physical body, this connection with Gaia herself, Mother Earth. And just relax deeply, so much that you fall into her arms like a little baby, completely held in the arms of the mother, feeling safe, warm, comfortable, completely letting go. And at the same time, feeling this beautiful energy of the cosmos pouring down from above, filling you up from above. And so feeling the physical body as this midpoint connection that you are between heaven and earth. And as you continue to breathe and relax and hold this energy, I'm going to say a little prayer and an invocation for our call today. We call on Great Spirit, Divine Mother, Father God, Self that we all are. We invite in all of our guides and teachers and all the beings who surround us in the highest love and support. We ask that you please surround us today in a cocoon of beautiful golden white light and love and healing energy, filling up this sacred circle. And please guide our conversation today into the highest love and the highest wisdom, allowing us to receive that which we need to walk into our soul's highest purpose in this lifetime. And we offer our gratitude, deep thanks for this time that we share together, for this field of love that surrounds us, the gift of these bodies, these precious physical bodies, for the gift of being incarnated on planet Earth, beautiful planet Earth, at this amazing time, at the shift of the ages. We give thanks for the opportunity to be midwives and pioneers of a new paradigm of heart-centered consciousness and love, birthing on the planet. What an extraordinary time to be alive, even amidst the challenges. And we are grateful to be able to see the light in the darkness. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Alalaho. Isn't it wonderful? And so I invite you now to slowly bring your awareness back into the room and into your body, and slowly wiggle your fingers and toes and stretch. Yawn. And when you're ready, open your eyes. And I welcome you. Welcome again, everybody. Welcome to all of our longtime Core Light friends and to everyone who's new. As I said, we have many people from around the world who attend these calls live, but more who listen in the future. And at this level of energy, there is no time, there is no past or future, just the present moment. So if you're attending in the future, we welcome you, and we know that you're with us in the present. I wanted to start today by reading a poem. This is a poem that was sent to me by a friend, and it's called Thanks. Listen, with the night falling, we are saying thank you. We are stopping on the bridges to bow from the railings. We are running out of the glass rooms with our mouths full of food to look at the sky and say thank you. We are standing by the water, thanking it. Standing by the windows, looking out in all directions. Back from a series of hospitals. Back from a mugging. After funerals, we are saying thank you. After the news of the dead, whether or not we knew them, we are saying thank you. Over telephones, we're saying thank you. In doorways and in the backs of cars and in elevators. Remembering wars and the police at the door and the beatings on stairs, we are saying thank you. In the banks, we are saying thank you. In the faces of the officials and the rich and of all who will never change, we go on saying thank you, thank you. With the animals dying around us, taking our feelings, we are saying thank you. With the forests falling faster than the minutes of our lives, we are saying thank you. With the words going out like cells of a brain, with the cities growing over us, we are saying thank you faster and faster. With nobody listening, we are saying thank you. Thank you, we are saying and waving. Dark though it is. That's a poem by W.S. Merwin from Migration, New and Selected Poems. So I thank you to my friend Carolyn for sending me that. So as I mentioned at the beginning of the call, we have some power days coming up. It's an energetic window that we're entering, and it's both personal and collective, as I'm sure you know. And it allows us an opportunity to ascend in consciousness. It's a portal that's opening up, a portal in consciousness, and it happens every year at this time. And for me, I don't know about you, but for me, this is such a special time of year. It's always an extraordinary opportunity on so many levels. And so today, we're going to talk about the various dates and what opportunities they represent for our transformation. And again, this is both personal and collective. So we have the opportunity in the coming weeks, not just to ascend ourselves, but also to help raise the vibration of the planet. And I know that's so important to everybody who attends these calls. So it's a good reminder for all of us about this opportunity. So before we get into the dates and talking about the powerful window, I just want to start by talking about a couple of other topics first. And the first one is just a follow-up on the topic from last month, which was spiritual detachment. And if you recall if you got a chance to listen to last month, most of the conversation was about that. It was about spiritual detachment and what it is and how to do it and what the benefits are and so forth. And how fundamental practicing spiritual detachment is to our awakening. It's really it's so much about the practice of witnessing, and that's something we talk about all the time on these calls because it is such an integral part of our awakening. And I received quite a bit of feedback from people last month about this, letting me know that the information was helpful, and I'm so happy to know that and to hear from you, and I really thank you for taking the time to let me know. As I always say, I really appreciate when you share with me. I hope you know that. And one of the things that somebody said to me was interesting. She said, you know, I've actually never really heard Leslie or you say it this way, because there was something very succinct about it. And so I wanted to just go over that again, just to repeat that very succinct part. And that is that the witness, sometimes called the neutral witness or the gentle witness or whatever you like to call it, the witness is our awakening. And I know we have said it. I've heard Leslie say it. We've said it many, many times. But sometimes, you know, it takes a few times, sometimes years of hearing it before it can drop in at a new level. So I just thought I would take this opportunity to highlight that, you know, to double click on it. And it was the message that Leslie gave from the day I met her, the very first day I met her over 30 years ago. I remember hearing it then, but not really getting what she was talking about at the time. But eventually I got it. So it's like the witness is a persona that we practice adopting. And it lasts for however long we can remember to do it. And, you know, that ability to witness comes and goes. And over time, as we practice it, our periods of witnessing get longer and longer. And the periods where the witness is on vacation get shorter and shorter, until eventually we realize that we're in the witness all the time. And that is magic. That is what self-realization is. It's realizing the self. It's knowing the self as you. It's making it real, realizing that we are the self, self-realization. And so living in that state here in this world of duality and separation while we're realized as the self. And even though the world around us might be living in separation and stuck in this appearance of duality, it's not that way for us. When you're in that state, you're living a life of higher consciousness, and you're living in truth, you're living in love. And even though you might be immersed in a world where there's a lot of limitation and a lack of love and fear and so forth, even though our old reality is being upended, even though there's this surreal quality to the changes happening on the earth, and we talked about that last month, how you can use that word throughout the day, every day, all day long, it seems surreal, you know. But even with these extraordinary changes happening, you live in a state of witnessing more and more and more, and that makes everything okay. And that's how we can just love our way through all of this. And so again, it's about keeping the heart open, no matter the circumstances, and despite whatever emotions might be passing through us, whether it's grief or anger or fear or sadness or whatever it is, we can experience all of that with a witness, and we can still know it's not who we are. Our heart doesn't close. It's okay. And that's entirely possible to do. And as we do that, it's as though we're bearing witness to both the dark and the light all at the same time. And that is the journey. That's the awakening. And that journey it's age old. We've been on this journey of light and dark for so many lifetimes. And this is the dance, right? It's the dance of light and dark. And it's one of the hardest things to master in this world, on planet Earth. It's the challenge of our incarnation. We come here to learn this, to see the divine in everything. See the divine in war as well as peace, in destruction as well as creation, in pain as well as in pleasure, and so on. And it's all about our human experience of witnessing these aspects, both the light and the dark, all while knowing who we really are, all while knowing that we are love, we're made of love, we are love. And that's the truth. And like I was saying, it's a practice. You know, just like learning to play a musical instrument or playing a sport, we get better at it the more we practice. And so it's important that we don't beat ourselves up for the times when the witness goes on vacation. And it eventually comes back. We know this, right? You know, we lose it sometimes and then it comes back. And that's when we start learning from the experience. And the next time it gets a little bit easier. And so it takes time and it takes patience. And it's important to have compassion for ourselves. Okay, so I just had to start with that topic today since it came up in a number of the correspondences of over the past month. And if you happen to be new today and this topic interests you, you can learn more about the witness in our book, The Marriage of Spirit. And that's available at corelight.org or on Amazon or bookstores or anywhere. So, okay, before we start talking about the dates, the power moments of this energetic window coming up, I just wanted to mention a process that's especially powerful to focus on right now. And it's about clearing the polarity of approval and disapproval and how that relates to the holiday traditions specifically. And how to know if our holiday traditions are serving our path of spiritual awakening. So I know that anybody who's been around Corelight for a while has been working on this particular polarity, clearing approval and disapproval. It's a polarity that goes deep to the core of the ego. And I remember when I first met Leslie, over 30 years ago, the very first process I did was on approval and disapproval. And as we all know, in general, you know, we tend to desire the approval and fear the disapproval, and we can live our whole lives revolved around that particular dynamic. And it starts really early in life. And oh, and also there might be a part of us that we would call the rebel, and that part of us might be doing the opposite. That part might be desiring the disapproval and rejecting the approval for the reasons that it has. And usually that part of us is a little more covert or a little more unconscious. So anyway, all of these aspects of the ego are really great to examine more deeply right now. And the reason it's important for right now is because as we enter the holiday period, we tend to get more caught up in the process of approval and disapproval, especially around our traditions. There are so many of our traditions that we just always follow sort of mindlessly, right? Because we've just always done them, and our family's always done them, and our grandparents did them, and so on. So what are traditions? They're habits. They're habits that have played out sometimes for generations, and sometimes they can be beneficial, you know, if they carry sacred meaning, if they give us joy, if they have beauty to us, you know, they're wonderful. And sometimes not so much. Sometimes it's more the habit of doing it. And so it's really important to get clear on this. And especially if you're a mystic, as I know everybody on this call is. And that means your life is about building your light. And it's about ascending in consciousness. Then you know that living by habit and by rote is not how to approach an energetic window like the one we're approaching. It's super important to be conscious of what we're doing, what our motivations are, and not just following along with traditions for the sake of the tradition. So how does approval and disapproval play out here? There's usually a really deep part of us that links approval with survival, and it links disapproval with death. And that is a primal part of us, and it comes from a very long time ago when we were tribal peoples, and rejection essentially meant death, rejection from the tribe. We relied on being part of a tribe or a community or a family, whatever you want to call it, for our survival. And if we didn't fit in for some reason, or we got kicked out for some reason, surviving on our own wasn't really possible. So being shunned by the tribe meant death. And so there's this ancient memory. It's personal, it's collective, and it's deep inside us. And that part of us would seek to be part of a tribe no matter what. We would seek the approval of our family and our friends and whatever tribe we feel we're part of, even if it means some kind of self-sacrifice on our part, even if it means going along with some traditions and showing up at certain gatherings that we know are going to drain our light, and so forth. It's that primal part of us that would not want to risk disapproval of the tribe by being different or by standing apart from them or saying no to them in any way. And another way that this plays out is that if we do have the courage to do what our heart's calling us to do, which might be not to participate in some of the traditions that our family and friends expect us to, because then some people tend to feel threatened by that. Because the way the dynamic works is that when we change or when we behave differently, other people's egos feel threatened. When we change or we behave differently than the tribe expects us, other people will sometimes misinterpret that as meaning that they're not okay. So instead of being able to see the changes that you're making as a positive thing and seeing that you're growing and you're evolving and you're becoming more of who you need to be, you know, and celebrating that, their egos can tend to make it about them. So instead of celebrating your growth with you, some people might fear, you know, that you're making some kind of statement that they're not okay. And this is normal. As strange as that may be, it's normal because it's part of the ego. The ego wants everything to remain the same. The ego is all about maintaining the status quo because that's how the brain is literally physiologically wired. The brain is wired for survival. And so if everything remains the same, then the brain knows that we'll be okay and we'll survive. So it is a natural and a physiological thing where the ego avoids change and tries to maintain control over everything, and that's the definition of the ego. The ego is synonymous with control. And just as an aside, just to be clear here, I'm not saying that the ego is bad and wrong, and that we need to kill the ego. That is not what this is about. I know there's a lot of sensitivity around that subject, and so it's important to remember that the ego is neither good nor bad. It is not about judging the ego. We all need an ego to be here on planet Earth, and if you're in a physical body on the planet, even if you're, you know, fully awakened, an avatar, you still need an ego. Everybody needs an ego because the ego is simply the vehicle that allows us to move through life. It's the container that the soul uses to be here on Earth, so along with the physical body. And some people say the physical body is an aspect of the ego. So it's all the vehicle. So we're just talking about recognizing the nature of the ego, getting clear on how it works, and, you know, talking about what its limitations are as well. So the way that this polarity of approval and disapproval gets instituted in us is that it takes place slowly over time. And in the beginning, we're not identified with it at all. When we're born, we're identified with love. We know we're love. We're made of love. And that's really all we know when we're born. Love is our identity. And if you've ever been a parent or spent time around newborn babies, you know the truth of this. Newborn babies are just bundles of love. They radiate light and love, and it's just such a beautiful, magical cocoon to be part of, you know, those first few days and weeks after a mother gives birth. It's just this exquisite love fest. And so if you've ever experienced that, you know what I'm talking about, being identified as love. But over time, what happens is that we trade our identification with love for approval. Because our parents and school teachers and society, they all shape us and they guide us, and we're taught about good and bad and right and wrong and yes and no. And so we learn which behaviors are the ones that get the approval and which ones get disapproval. And because we rely on our parents for our survival, learning about approval and disapproval is really, at its root, it's life and death. It's a life and death situation for a child to learn those lessons of approval and disapproval. And I know that some people are especially blessed to have conscious parents who did not imprint them heavily with approval and disapproval, and who were raised with so much love. It's been amazing to me over the last few decades. I've watched some longtime Corelight community students who are parents raise their kids consciously and with so much love. And it's just amazing to see how whole these kids are as young adults now. I mean, it's just so beautiful. And it's not just Corelight. I see it happening all over the place. You know, there's a whole new generation of these very awake kids. It's so beautiful to see. But for most people, approval and disapproval become fundamental to survival. And so we get hardwired into that polarity at a very deep level. And it goes on through childhood and all the way into early adulthood. The researchers say that the brain is still being the basic hardwiring of the brain continues to be formed all the way up until about age 28. Isn't that amazing? I heard that not long ago, and I thought, wow, okay, well, that makes total sense to me. But eventually, we lose our identity as love. And we start to identify more and more with the ego that we developed over time through the conditioning of our parents and teachers and our culture. And much of that conditioning comes from learning what gets approval and what gets disapproval. And so we make that trade from love to approval as part of our life as human beings on planet Earth in the third dimension. But that is until we start to wake up, right? Until we actually realize it doesn't have to be this way. And that's when we start doing the egoic clearing work so that we can learn to detach from approval and disapproval and detach from needing to behave like the tribe expects us to, or like an authority figure expects us to. We learn more and more to follow our own hearts and to use our own discernment. And so we practice critical thinking, and we learn to say no to things, and we learn to do the things that are true for us. And so eventually, we regain our identity as love. And so part of that journey back to love is about clearing that polarity of approval and disapproval. And it's about practicing even-mindedness or equanimity. Whether or not we're getting praise or getting blame or approval or disapproval or whatever. So let's see, there's a lot more I could share, but I think for the sake of time, that's probably enough for right now. And if this is a subject that interests you, Leslie actually has an audio that is called Clearing Approval and Disapproval. I highly recommend it. It is available on our web store at corelight.org, if that interests you. And, you know, there's an exercise that we would all benefit from doing, and that would be to do a square. Between now and the next time we meet in January, do a square on approval and disapproval. So the corners would be the desire for approval and the fear of approval, the desire for disapproval, and the fear of disapproval. And, you know, we can also do a triangle on that polarity. If you remember, triangle is finding the ascended balance point for the polarity. So what would that be for you? If you did a triangle right now on approval and disapproval, what would the top of the triangle be, the ascended balance? Well, there is no wrong answer, but two of the words that I've used very recently, just in the last few minutes, actually are equanimity. That's a good one, I think. And also another one is detachment. And I think both could go at the top. And I'm sure there are many other words as well. All right, so let's move on. I want to talk a little bit about some of these power days coming up and what the opportunities are that they're offering us. As a reminder, tomorrow's 12/12. Solstice is 12/21. There's Christmas Eve and Christmas Day. The Hanukkah season is December 18th through 26th, and then there's New Year's. So we've got several weeks here of essentially holy days, a sacred window of opportunity. So let's start with 12/12. My friend Linda Tucker, who some of you know, she runs the Global White Lion Protection Trust in South Africa. She's a lion shaman. And she's written many books. And she says that for her, 12/12 is one of the most powerful days of the year. And she said that the power actually begins on 8/8, on August 8th, which is called the Lion's Gate. And that's when the star Sirius aligns with our sun, which is in Leo, the lion. And so the power actually begins building at that point, and it continues to build over the 4 months of the year to up till now. So there are other dates associated with, moments in time that are powerful. So it's 8/8, 9/9, 10/10, 11/11, and 12/12. And many shamans around the world practice rituals on these days. So it is an auspicious day tomorrow to observe in some form. If you have the time, you can do a ceremony or whether it's a ceremony or just doing some kind of self-inquiry work, you know, going into meditation for a brief time, seeing what's there to work on in yourself, doing a little journaling, whatever it is for you, but there's power tomorrow. So if you can take a little time tomorrow to just see what's right for you to do, and it'll be a huge benefit from this added spiritual power of the day. And again, this is not just one day we're talking about. This is a window. It goes from 12/12 at least through the solstice, if not into New Year's. So let's talk about the solstice next. Solstice is December 21st. Exactly, it's approximately 2 p.m. Pacific, U.S. Pacific time. You can calculate for yourself when that is, wherever you are in the world. And of course, it's the winter solstice in the Northern Hemisphere, which signals the energetic shift from dark to light, or you could say from yin to yang. And it's the summer solstice in the Southern Hemisphere, which signals the energetic shift from light to dark, or you could say from yang to yin. And there's a lot to share about this particular solstice. It feels to me like it's going to be particularly powerful portal. And if we choose to, we can use this time to deepen into higher consciousness in an especially powerful way. And why is that? Why is it especially powerful this year? Because it's always an energetic doorway. It's always a pivot point. And it's never just one day. It's a window that lasts a few days before and after the 21st. There's the powerful energetic component, but there's also a physical component to it, because around the solstice, there's a reduction of the Earth magnetic field. And it opens an energetic doorway for new energies to come in to the Earth and to be seeded into human consciousness. And this particular solstice feels especially powerful as a pivot point, because we've been in a pivot point in consciousness for several months. So it's almost like a larger cycle of change has the potential to culminate energetically in some way with the pivot point of the solstice. It's almost like, feels like a laser beam to me. It feels like, you know, like a magnifying glass. We're really honing in on a short window of time, but it's a much larger cycle. So it's like compressed power. And I think it's important to remember that so much of the window, so much of what we're continuing to go through is around getting comfortable with the feminine energies or the yin energies. And those are things like formlessness, the unknown, emotions, paradox, slowness, and the list of traditional yin energies. So we've talked about this quite a bit throughout the course of this year. We actually started talking about it in June. So it's interesting, isn't it, that it's around the time of the previous solstice. And then it went on for several months. So if you didn't have a chance to listen to the calls from, I think it was June, July, August, it might have been September as well, you might want to go back and listen to those. You can find them on our free resources page or on YouTube. I think those months when the rising power of the feminine was peaking were the pivot point of the year. And so it's interesting that here we are in the December solstice, and it's the end of a six-month cycle, which has been about the empowerment of the feminine energies in each of us personally, but also in the collective. So we're being given an opportunity now as the year culminates to pivot more into becoming comfortable with those yin energies and to let go even more of any discomfort that we might have with them. And the ego does have a lot of discomfort with those things, with formlessness and paradox. It can't stand those things. So it's an opportunity to let go even more of that discomfort and to allow them to deepen and anchor inside us more than ever before. And this is all a part of our balancing the masculine and feminine energies inside us, which, you know, it's foundational to our spiritual awakening. And it's ongoing, of course. You know, there are much bigger cycles at play here. We're talking about thousands of years of patriarchy, right, that are now pivoting into the what we call the new paradigm of the heart, but it's a balance between masculine and feminine energies. So this shorter cycle that I'm talking about is a microcosm of that bigger macrocosmic shift. And like I said, it certainly doesn't diminish its power. If anything, it compresses its power and it makes it laser-like. So we have this powerful opportunity to choose to use this solstice to create a significant shift for each of us personally, and again collectively as well. But all we can do really is focus on ourselves for now. So the solstice is also like 12/12. It's a wonderful time to do a ceremony. You can do it in meditation, either alone or with a group, or you can go out into nature, or whatever you feel like doing, as long as you do something to officially mark the occasion and you make the universe your witness and you acknowledge the pivot point in your life and you ask for support and new consciousness to come in and support with anchoring that new consciousness within you. And also to add, it's not just about the empowerment of the yin energies, because energetically and collectively, there's so much happening. We're at a point where we're in like a time of emerging into a whole new cycle of life for so many people. And for some people, it's huge, and for others, it may not seem so big, but still, if you take the opportunity to just look closely at what's happening in your life, there's probably some aspect of your life that has the potential to experience a major overhaul, whether it's in relationship or business or your home life or health or financial or whatever it is. The invitation to all of us is to just take a little look, to see where do we have the opportunity? Where are we being given an opportunity to make a shift and to bring in a new consciousness? And we talked about this on the previous call in November, so I'm not going to repeat any of that, but just to be aware that this is a time where we're in a window of opportunity to make some big changes in our lives if we choose to. And I guess I feel like I'd like to just offer a little personal check-in about this in case it's helpful. I did talk last month about a mystical experience that I was having around, I was clearing out Leslie's and my two storage units in Santa Fe. And so as I did that, it was all about letting go of the past. And I can tell you, it continued for an entire month. And oh my goodness, what a journey. I just finished the project a few days ago, and I'm totally amazed at how it feels to purge so much physical stuff. I didn't even think we had that much, but wow. I mean, I've done this before. This is not new. I've done it a lot in my life, actually. But this was somehow a deeper layer. It was a deeper level of it. Letting go of the physical is always a reconciling with the past and an opening to something new, making room for a new phase. But this, like this time we're in, I think is supercharged. So for me, it was poignant. It was difficult. It was exciting. It was inspiring. There was grief and there was joy, and it all ran the gamut of the emotions and experiences, states of mind. I'm aware that for me, it was about opening up to a whole new phase of my life and letting go of physical things was a big part of this. And it's been a cycle, this has been going on for actually a couple of years or more, but I just feel this massive energetic release and a door opening to a big new cycle. Like I said, I realize the whole year has been in preparation for this. And I wonder if that's true for many of you. I know quite a few people for whom it is true. I'm not alone. I know people doing similar things, opening up to new phases of life. And as I said, for some people, it's bigger than others. You know, you might be going through a big change in just one area of your life. But whatever change you're going through, this is a fantastic time to take stock. You know, stop, pause, take stock of what's happening in your life with this change, and journal about it, and mark the occasion with a ceremony of some kind. And this window between solstice, between 12/12 and solstice, is ideal for that. And actually, even going up to New Year's, so any time is good for this. And I don't want to get ahead of myself. I want to talk about New Year's. But in keeping with the theme of opening up to the new, there's another powerful exercise that came through when I was tuning in on what to talk about today. And it's really good for these times to ask ourselves, what inspires us? So that's another, it's an exercise that can be incorporated into everything we're talking about. And this is a feeling exercise. It's not a thinking exercise. You know, when you ask yourself what inspires you, it's important to feel into your body and into your heart center and into your emotions. And it's important to remember that you can make joy and inspiration your new north. In other words, like what I like to do is, nowadays, for years I've been practicing this and it's very helpful. Any decision I have to make, I weigh it against my heart and I ask myself, does this bring me joy? Is this part of my passion? And so if there's something in your life that's not inspiring and not bringing you joy, then you get to examine it. You get to say, well, why am I doing this? And, you know, you look at, is it draining you or is it feeding you? And if it's draining you, then you ask yourself, well, why do I continue to do this? And so you reevaluate the situation. Does it still need to be a part of your life? And with an exercise like this, this kind of review is bound to bring up shadow. It's just, you know, that's to be expected. It can bring up our projections onto other people and situations and so forth, because we're going to find all the relationships and all the situations that are not working for us for some whatever reason. So this is a great opportunity to do that self-inquiry work to clear whatever arises when you do this exercise. And earlier in the call, we touched on this a little bit in terms of reviewing our holiday traditions to see if they drain us or feed us, and to evaluate if they're in keeping with our highest spiritual journey or not. And so this is really just an extension of that. It's part and parcel. If the holiday tradition brings us joy or peace or love, then it's a good one to keep. And if not, then it's a good one not to participate in anymore. So I just wanted to talk a little bit more about the Christmas, Hanukkah holiday period, and specifically how we can approach this time as mystics. As people who are on a spiritual path, who are committed to building our light, to spiritual awakening, I say mystics. You can call it whatever you want. So I'm sure this is going to be a reminder for many people, and if it is, I hope you'll agree that it deserves just a little bit of our time today. As mystics, we treat the holidays as an experience of the light. And I just made a little checklist here, so I'm going to refer to my notes. I hope this is helpful. So first of all, It's a great opportunity to focus on our witnessing practice, especially if you're spending time with your family. Leslie used to say, if you think you're enlightened, spend some time with your family. That goes. So if you do spend time with your family, you can use that time as a measuring stick to see how your journey of awakening is going and to see how strong your witness is. Also, as we talked about today, it's great to celebrate the holidays in any way that feeds you and to avoid the things that drain you. If it brings you joy, then you enjoy it. And if it doesn't, then it's time for a change. And as you open to a new part of yourself, you might find yourself creating new traditions that serve the new you and get creative with it. Another thing on my little checklist here, one of the biggest challenges of the holidays is the busyness. And that's at least in the U.S. with so much going on. I mean, we all know this, right? The parties, the gift buying, the decorating, the special dinners, the, you know, end of year newsletters, family photos, all the things, the list goes on and on, right? I mean, it's just too much sometimes, and I know it's also a very busy time in some other countries too, but I think somehow the U.S. goes especially bananas at this time of year. And I know there's some countries that don't do it at all. Like my experience of being in South Africa for the holidays was like it was heavenly because it's too hot. People just go to the beach or go sit by the pool. You know, there's not the same fanfare that happens in the Northern Hemisphere, I think. So Leslie and I used to love to spend the holidays there together occasionally to just get away from the madness and the chaos of the holidays. So anyway, you can lose a lot of light from getting too busy and trying to fit too much in. So as a mystic, it's much more important to not try to do so much and rather to focus on love. So less doing, more love. Another thing on my list here, it's also important to focus on finding the light behind all their traditions. So there's light behind everything, even things like commercialism. So for example, when you see people focusing on commercialism, it's good to remember that the tradition of buying gifts is about generosity and giving. And that's a very important spiritual principle. And so another example would be when you see people focusing on decorations. So we can remember that tradition is about creating beauty and creating luminosity in the material world. And so that's also an important spiritual principle. So I think you get the idea of where I'm going with this. And I think at any time of year, people are generally searching for the light in the dark. You know, they're searching for the light in the material world, in the density. And I think that's especially true in the Northern Hemisphere at this time of year, because we're at the peak of the darkness and everybody's searching for the light. So, for example, when you're immersed in these various traditions we're talking about for the holidays, like music and gatherings and gift giving and decorating and all that stuff, we can ask ourselves, what is the light behind all of this? And that's a very helpful exercise, and it's a reminder to us to focus on the light. And the solstice is the perfect metaphor for that practice, right? It's remembering the light in the dark. So, okay, so amidst the busyness, remember that it's vital. Make sure you take some alone time. Make sure you take whatever time you need to de-stress. Say no if you need to. change the tradition whenever you want to. And I'll add this last part here. Sometimes it's really helpful and it's very special to spend the holidays alone. You know, that it may or may not be possible for you, but if you try it as a mystical experience, you discover that it's very different and it can be very empowering. For one thing, when you're alone and you do less of the traditional celebrating, it's an opportunity to practice witnessing all of that in a very powerful way. It really strengthens the witness. So let's see, I want to talk about New Year's, but before I do, Leslie wrote a little story called Charlie Brown's Christmas Tree. And you might be familiar with that story. It's from the book Returning to Oneness. It's on page 20 to 22 in the third edition, the new edition that we published last year. I'm going to read it to you. Short. Loss is only a perception of the limited mind. One year in the early 1980s, I had worked quite late on Christmas Eve, and I had to drive a couple of hours down the interstate to my apartment. Although I had never spent Christmas alone, due to my circumstances that year, I was destined to be spending Christmas on my own, and I had done nothing about it, made no preparations or anything. I had no furniture either, since I'd just moved into the apartment. Somehow it felt like I was being set up to have quite possibly a most depressing holiday. Even though it was late, I thought, well, I'll just go down to the local Christmas tree lot and see if I can get a tree. It was already 8:30 p.m. The attendant was closing the gate as I got there, and the lot was empty of people and trees. I realized that all the tree shoppers must be at home eating Christmas Eve dinner with their families and friends. The salesman didn't really have anything left, but we found a nice branch. Under the circumstances, I was thrilled to get the branch. I took it home and I sort of propped it up in the corner. It crossed my mind that this was going to be a dreary Christmas since I had no decorations, just a very short string of rainbow-colored lights, which I wound around the tree. On the journey home, the branch had transformed in my mind into a tree. It was a Charlie Brown Christmas tree. I made the conscious choice not to feel like a, quote, loser, and not to feel depressed about being alone in an empty apartment on Christmas. Instead of buying into the idea of loss, I chose to perceive my circumstances differently. To my surprise, I soon became totally entranced by the small tree slash branch with its colored lights. It lit up the whole place since there was no furniture to compete with it. So I sat for hours in meditation, open-eyed meditation, just gazing at this tree, and I ended up sitting the whole night. Given that it was Christmas Eve, I thought, well, this is probably a good time to meditate all night. During the long hours, all I did was sing the praises of the divine and express my gratitude, giving thanks for the year that had gone by and for the blessings of my life. I focused on all the wonderful things that had happened, and I loved this tree. I just worshiped the divine through the beauty of this Charlie Brown Christmas tree. I think it was about 1 a.m. when an energy came in that was so transcendental that I could not focus properly on the lights anymore. My eyes went out of focus so that the lights were refracting in every direction, and the tree became sort of kaleidoscopic, rainbow cloaked, and aura enclosed, just exquisite. All I could see was the aura around the lights and these rainbow beams going everywhere. It got more and more beautiful as the night flowed on. My state of consciousness became increasingly vast, eternal, and transcendental. The experience lasted through the whole of the next day. That day, I walked on the deserted beach near my home, and I was in ecstasy. It didn't matter that my tree was this little Charlie Brown branch and that I had five colored lights on it. It had turned into a magical doorway into eternity. I was tapping into the generosity of spirit. With this experience came the realization that when you're in equanimity with the truth, what will manifest for you is beyond your wildest dreams. All right, my friends, I just had to read that to you. So let's wrap up our call today with talking about New Year's. So New Year's is about, it's about letting go of the past year. It's about welcoming in the birth and the renewal of the new year. And it's attuning to the 2023 energies that are coming in. And I can share with you some exercises that I love to do every New Year's. And these are traditions, quote unquote, you know, that I have made for myself that serve the path of awakening for me. So I share them with you in that spirit. So the first exercise is to take stock of 2022, and I write a little list of highlights of the year and maybe accomplishments or whatever it was. And then, you know, it's about writing them down so that we can let go of the past. And then the second one is about visioning 2023. So again, it's about making a list. It's about being inspired about, you know, the new you, who you've become, and writing about what you see lies ahead for you in the new year. And then you do a ceremony and you offer both lists up. So you can offer, like what I like to do is I offer the list of the highlights and accomplishments of the previous year to the fire, if you want to do that. And then, with the list of visioning the new year ahead, sometimes it's nice to take that list and put it in a drawer, like tucked in the back of a drawer, or put it like under a crystal on your altar or something, and don't look at it again, you know, just leave it for a year. And then you pull it out again around New Year's the following year to see how your vision played out during the year and what parts of it manifested and what dropped away and what needs to be carried over to the next year. And so that's a very powerful mystical exercise. I highly recommend that one. So it's time to move on for questions and answers. But let me just close by saying, whether you spend the holidays alone or with your family, as you practice all of these exercises for mystics that we've been talking about, we're in an opportunity to ascend in consciousness if you want to use it that way. And it's really about remembering that this time of year is about birthing the Christ consciousness within each of us. And it's about practicing love. It's about putting our love into action and practicing generosity and gratitude and all those higher ascended states. And ultimately, it's about remembering that we are made of love and that we are love. That's who we are. That is how we identified as a newborn when we came in. And it's what we're heading back to. I know many of you are already there. And I love being with you in that field of love. So above all, I just wish for you that you enjoy this time, that you celebrate the festivities. And I invite all of us to discover the light in the darkness. Okay, so let's move on to questions. I want to thank you again so much for your questions that you write in and all that people have sent some beautiful, heartfelt sharing to me lately, and I'm so grateful to hear from you. In case you're new, the way it works is that you can email your questions or sharing in advance to me at courses@corelight.org. And if you're on the web call, you can type your questions in on the Q&A board, and those will be for the next month's call. And it's not possible for me to answer all the questions, but I do read them all, and I do get to as many of them as I can. And if your question doesn't get answered by me, the answer always comes from somewhere. You know, we get it in a book or a dream or another teacher. Somebody shows you somehow. So this question is from Kathleen, and it is from the previous month. I've been feeling this tremendous, constant, supercharged, restless energy deep inside myself for some time now. This energy vibrates through my body and won't go away, and it leaves me with the sense that I should be doing something so much bigger than pushing papers in an office, and so much bigger than myself. It holds such a sense of urgency. I want to help animals and the planet. I'm not sure what this energy is, but it feels right and true, and I want to act upon it. I've always helped people and rescued many animals, but this feels like so much more than the neighborhood things. What can I do? Where do I begin? I want to help where I'm needed the most and will be most effective. Well, thank you, Kathleen. You know, it's just so great that you are called to help in a bigger way like this. It really sounds like that you're being called in a very powerful way to make a change. And so first of all, I encourage you, because the world really needs a lot more passionate people like you to put love into action. You know, the world needs change makers. So I just think it's great that you feel called to serve in that way, in a bigger way. And I have to say also, I can totally relate to your question. I remember feeling that way when I worked in an office for a corporation. It was many moons ago, and I really, really wanted to do something so much bigger than pushing papers in an office. I mean, it was like, I get it. I really get what you're saying. And I wrote, it was such a powerful experience to me how I got sprung from that job to live my passion, that I wrote a story about it in my book, Living with Enlightenment. So I don't know if you've read Living with Enlightenment, but that story would interest you, I think. So what happened was intuitively, let me say this. When I tune in on you, Kathleen, what I get is a strong feeling that you're going to pursue that calling. And I also get that the timing is going to be important. And it may not be the timing that part of you hopes for. It might, but it will definitely be good to practice patience no matter what. And like I said, if you read that story I wrote about my experience, which seems very similar to yours, you'll see that so much of it is about patience. And about honoring the divine timing around your experience and recognizing that the divine timing, let me share from my perspective. Let me do it that way. Recognizing the divine timing had a lot to do with my own consciousness. And about learning everything I needed to learn from the job I had pushing papers. So it was like I wasn't allowed to leave that job until I had really gotten everything out of it that my soul needed me to get. And so I did a lot of the inner processing work to help me get there. And that was really what sped up my being able to get out of there, was that self-inquiry work. So before you quit your day job, my strong recommendation to you is to do some processing around all of that. And if you're new to Corelight, when I say processing, what I mean is this, what I'm calling the self-inquiry work. Those are synonymous. We use the polarity processing techniques that are in the Marriage of Spirit book. And I guess I wonder if you've tried those yet. They're very powerful, and they create fast change. but you don't have to use those techniques. You can use any techniques that work for you. It's just important that you use some techniques. So I just know the marriage of spirit techniques work very well for most people who try them, and it's usually very fast. So they work on the principle that your outer world is a mirror of your own consciousness. So if you want to change the outer world, you first focus on shifting your own consciousness. And usually people think it's the other way around, but this is actually the truth of it, the metaphysical truth. And it's very empowering because you learn that by changing yourself, you can manifest the things in the world that your soul is calling you to do. And that's what you're feeling right now. You're feeling it around helping animals and the earth. So I think, I just want to give you a little bit more of my example in case it's helpful. So like you, I felt very anxious to get out of that office and to get far away from shuffling the papers. And I could feel I had, a bigger job. I could feel I had other things calling me that I was really supposed to do, and it was overwhelming. But I felt stuck, I felt stuck. I couldn't leave. So looking back on it, I realized that there was a part of me that was aware that I was supposed to help Leslie start CoreLight. I had already met Leslie at that time, but we hadn't started our relationship, and I hadn't started helping her with CoreLight. So I'm just telling you that because I wasn't conscious of it at the time, but I'm talking to you from 30 years later. And so it's like I look back in hindsight, and I want to have a lot of compassion for myself at that age because I felt so pressured to get out of there. And I can just tell you, I'm hoping that this is a comfort. I'm hoping that it's helpful to hear that, you will get out of there, and you'll get out of there more quickly if you do the inner processing work and get whatever lessons your soul is calling you to get from your job shuffling papers in an office. I knew at the time that the place to start was with that self-inquiry work. I remember doing a lot of polarity lifts and squares, and I remember there was one particularly powerful square that I did that I want to share with you just in case it's helpful, you can do it yourself. And it was leaving my job versus staying in my job. So the corners of that square would be the desire to leave my job, the fear of leaving my job, the desire to stay in my job, the fear of staying in my job. And if you don't know how to do a square, we talk about it in the Marriage of Spirit book, so you can read the chapter on squares in there if you want. And so you might want to start with that one and see. I can imagine it would be very helpful if you do it. And then when you're done with it, you simply offer it up. You give it all back to spirit. You let it go, and you call in the new consciousness. So I don't think I'm going to share the rest of my story with you because you can read it if you want to, but I think the important takeaway for me was that the moment that I completed the process, the moment that I got the lessons my soul needed me to get from that office and shuffling those papers, as soon as my consciousness shifted, I was out of there within like a week. Boom. It was so fast. It was like magic. So I hope that that's inspiring to you. I just also, before we close on your question, there was one more thing you said that I felt I needed to respond to. You also asked, where do you begin and where do you go in order to do what you want to do? And I think what's so amazing is that that's the part that you don't need to worry about at all. You don't need to focus on that really necessarily. Because once you clear your consciousness, And you complete that inner process, the outer details become super clear. The manifestation of the job, and the place you need to be and the people you need to be with and all the particulars, the money, everything, it all gets shown to you when your consciousness is clear and you're finished with whatever was before and you're ready for your next step. And sometimes it seems like magic because it can come so quickly and easily. And that's because you did that inner clearing work to make it possible. And wait a minute, there's one more thing before we close out. You mentioned a sense of urgency, and I just want to touch for a moment on the issue of urgency. I've learned that it's something to be aware of and to witness, and that there can be processes around that that are good to focus on and to clear. So what do I mean by this? I mean that urgency creates a sense of pressure and deadlines and a feeling of like, I've got to do this or else there's going to be some kind of negative consequence. And although some of that might be accurate, the pressure and the stress and the intensity of it are not going to help you achieve what your soul came here to do. And in fact, it's going to hinder you. So one of the processes to focus on is to let go of a sense of urgency, even if there really might be some kind of deadline or a consequence involved or whatever. And I know that sorry, I have to apologize. I know that might be easier said than done. And I'm sorry if it makes you angry to hear. But it's important to at least be aware of it and to become more conscious of it so that you can witness it and hopefully let it go at some point. And again, I remember personally, I used to get so stressed over anything that I felt a sense of urgency about. And I thought that was a good thing. I thought that the pressure was good motivation. I thought I was really doing good work for a good cause, and you know, pressure was okay. And so some of that was accurate, but like looking back on it, I realized that was a very limited consciousness. I was only able to help a little bit because my consciousness was so limited by my belief in urgency. And it created conditions where I would end up sacrificing my own joy, sacrificing my physical well-being for whatever the cause was. And, you know, I did it gladly out of a sense of duty and loyalty and out of love. And I realized later that it was draining me and that it was a very limited way of helping. So for me, I saw that the process came from the victim, tyrant, savior dynamic. I saw that by sacrificing my joy and my well-being and letting my light get drained from all the stress and the intensity, I realized I was holding some kind of martyr or savior or rescuer process, whatever you want to call it, like a consciousness of the rescuer. And that's a polarized consciousness. It's win-lose. I was saving and rescuing, but at the expense of myself. And so that's a trap because you get stuck in a polarity that way. And it actually can entrench the issue more, not just for you, but for whoever you're saving and rescuing. So I guess I realized that I needed to clear my own consciousness at a deeper level around all that, and I needed to create a win-win situation around my service work. And I needed to remember to give myself time to practice my self-care and maintain my light, and so forth. So I processed. I used the polarity lists and the squares and the triangles, and I practiced witnessing. And I did all the things I needed to do, especially witnessing what was draining me and witnessing what was feeding me. And so I discovered that one of the biggest issues for me around all of this was letting go of that sense of urgency. And to the degree that I could let go of that sense of urgency, I was more able to maintain my own well-being and my joy and my light, as well as serving in a very powerful way. And so the more I could do this, the more fulfilling my work became, and the more I was asked to help, it's like things grew as I cleared myself. So I guess I discovered that I could help a lot more, and I could enjoy myself a lot more, and I could maintain my higher consciousness all at the same time when I learned to let go of that sense of urgency and deadlines and intensity. And ironically, even though, you know, the project may be urgent and it may have deadlines, you know, when we can maintain that sense of peace and calm, then everything gets done much more quickly, much more efficiently, much more easily. And I just want to say, I'm not saying that this is what you're doing, Kathleen. I'm not saying that you have a false sense of urgency about this or anything like that. That's not what I'm saying. I just felt that since you mentioned urgency, I should probably share my own journey around urgency with you, in case that's helpful. And it might be something you want to take a look at to see if there's any processing you might want to do around urgency. Take a look at what's the opposite of urgency. What do you think that is? Maybe apathy, laziness. I don't know, something like that. You can do polarity list on it. You can do square on it. You can do a triangle on it. You can use your witness self just to gently observe, you know, without judging yourself, just see what's happening in your consciousness around the sense of urgency. And so you might find some issues that you can process and clear there, and that'll really help you to manifest your dream a lot quicker. Also, I one last thing. I remember there was a good friend of mine who she once spoke to me about my sense of urgency, and I think I used to kind of wear my sense of urgency like a badge of honor in some ways, kind of strangely. And honestly, I think the process behind it was something to do with self-importance around being a rescuer. And I think a lot of Westerners have that process. So anyway, she said she recognized it in me because she also had it. And then she told me a story about how she met some indigenous tribes people in Africa once, who were in a very remote part of Africa, and they spoke to her a long time ago about her sense of urgency. And they said, oh, yes, urgency. We don't have that here. We don't do that here. If something feels urgent to us, we might move a little bit faster and with an increased sense of purpose. But we don't get stressed and intense about it like you Westerners do. So I have to say, when I first heard that, I was actually really upset because I was super attached to my sense of urgency and my, you know, my paradigm of rescuing and self-sacrificing. And so that idea was very shattering to me. To think that it could be another way was felt like an attack, you know, attack on my reality. But as I processed and, you know, let that sink in with time and with patience, I realized that those indigenous people were sharing a much higher truth. And eventually it became a great comfort to me to know that there was a different way. And I didn't need to live with that pressure and that stress in my life. And oh my goodness, what a difference that makes. So life is so much more enjoyable, and I can serve in a much more supportive way, and it's just a win-win all around, including for me. All right, so Kathleen, thank you so much for your question, and I'm sorry it took a whole month to get to it. I know you asked it last time, but I hope that's helpful. Gosh, we're running out of time. I do want to fit one more question in. I don't know if we have time. Let me give it a try. This is from Linda. Linda says, hi, Brad, I'm reading your book, Living with Enlightenment, and I'm wondering if you could say a little bit more about discerning between the processes in the collective, those that are another person's, and our own. in your amusing example of, quote, I want my beer and I want my chick. It seems obvious, and maybe when it truly isn't ours, it always is obvious. And I guess that would be the question. Is it that obvious? I've pretty much functioned as if it's showing up in my world, I must have a piece in it. After all, there's no them out there. It's all us. Perhaps, though, there's some room for greater discernment here. So if you haven't read the book and you don't know the story, I guess to just fill you in, basically I was talking about, about a year and a half after I met Leslie, I got this powerful lesson while I was on a trip with her to Santa Fe, New Mexico. We, from Los Angeles, we had not started our relationship yet, but I had this really deep meditation experience and shadow clearing experience, and it changed my life forever. And as I was driving back from that intensive with Leslie in the car back to LA, we were approaching Southern California, and Leslie was asleep in the passenger seat, and I was, on the freeway just cruising along late at night. And I was so exhilarated. I felt so expanded. I was in such a state of no mind and no thought. I was completely empty. It's a very mystical experience. And around 10 o'clock at night, we were driving through Barstow, California. It's kind of the first town you come to outside LA that's got any kind of population to it. And it's mostly truck stops and biker bars. And so as we were driving through there, I started thinking this thought, I want a beer and I want my chick. So weird, because I wasn't thinking anything before that. And suddenly this thought, this random thought, and it felt like my thought. And it just kept, I just tried to ignore it, but it kept coming to me. I want my beer and I want my chick, and it would not go away. And I thought, what the, WTF, what is this? How can I be thinking this? Doesn't make any sense. It's definitely not what I want. But it kept beeping at me. And so I realized that the penny dropped, not my thought. I was feeling the thoughts of the people in that town. And because I was so wide open and empty inside, I was able to experience that. And I feel so incredibly blessed that I was given that experience, so that I could know beyond any doubt what it's like to pick up on someone else's thought forms. And to know when they're clearly not ours. So in that example, it was super obvious. It was not my thought. But Linda, I think the second part of your question is the most important part, because you're naming one of the biggest issues that we all face, and that is, how do you discern when the thoughts are yours, or when you're picking up on somebody else's thoughts or the collective thoughts, when it's not so obvious? So the big question is, what about when it's more subtle, like you said? So I guess in that same chapter of the book, I gave another example. later that night, we were driving through West LA, Los Angeles, starting to approach the more affluent areas. And I started to think I needed to buy a new car. And I really believed it for a while, but then I realized that was just crazy, because I didn't need a new car. And it took a little longer for it to dawn on me that I was picking up on the collective thought form of that area, even with that thought. It was a fairly wealthy part of LA, and a lot of people were really focused on getting new cars. So I learned from that experience that, it takes a lot of discernment to know if it's your thought or not. Because it's just a thought in your head, and you don't know where it's coming from. You don't know whether it's your own thought or someone else's. The thoughts, they all seem the same when they're in your head. They're just there, and they're passing through your mind. And it's up to you whether or not you're going to get attached to a thought, or, believe that thought, or act on the thought, or whatever you're going to do with that thought. And that's, of course, in meditation. It's the practice is just to watch the thoughts pass through. They come, they arise, you know, they pass through, and then they leave. And you just watch them. And you don't need to know whether it's your thought or someone else's thought, because none of the thoughts are you anyway. So I guess the best ways that I know of to practice that skill, you know, and to improve your ability to discern whether it's your own thought or someone else's are through meditation and doing the egoic clearing work. And when we really get clear inside through meditation and doing egoic clearing work, we just don't have so many thoughts anymore. Our minds are not racing all the time. The mind gets quieter and quieter. The more we practice those techniques, you know, we become empty inside, and then it's much easier to discern if the thoughts are yours or someone else's, or they're the collective. And the clearer and quieter our consciousness is, the better we are at that kind of discernment. So I think some people might be wondering, well, why does this matter at all? Why would we necessarily want to have that skill? And I think it's important to name that there's some really practical applications to this. We're talking about a form of telepathy. And if you can know what other people are thinking in this way, because you're empty inside, then it guides you in how to respond to them better. And it helps you to know how to help them better. It can save a lot of arguments and hassles, and you can be a lot more efficient with whatever the job is you're doing if you're able to read people in that way. So I think that's one of the very practical applications, is if you're in a job and you can do that, it usually means you save a lot of time, and it often means that you earn more money. So I know, you know, that's something that a lot of people in the world would love to be able to do. But, you know, as a mystic, I think most importantly, it's a way of service, and it's a way of our own spiritual awakening. Having that skill really helps us with our spiritual awakening, because the emptier that we are inside, the stronger our witness becomes. And so we've come full circle. As we talked about at the beginning of the call, the witness is our spiritual awakening. So I hope that's helpful, Linda. Thank you for the great question. And I'm just looking at the time, and I'm amazed. Two hours flew by very fast today. So let's close for the day, and we'll just take a moment to say our final closing prayer. So I invite you to close your eyes and take a few long, slow, deep breaths. Just get quiet. Breathe deeply and let go. Feeling the peace. Feeling the field of love. Feeling a sense of joy. Feeling your heart center. Just let's all give thanks right now. Gratitude. We offer our gratitude for the time that we get to share together. We give thanks for the support of the guides. Give thanks for our beloved teacher and friend, Leslie, who has helped us so much with so many tools and so much wisdom and so much unconditional love. And we're grateful for each other, for this community, for this field of love that we share with each other. And once again, we're grateful for these beautiful bodies that we get to wear for a few years on this beautiful planet at this extraordinary time of change. And so let's make an offering right now. Let's offer up all of the squares and the polarities that we named during the call. I don't have them written down in front of me, but you know what they are. So let's just give them back. And let's call in our stronger witness. Let's call in our equanimity, our gratitude, our spiritual detachment, generosity, and our unconditional love. And we ask for support from the invisible realms as we claim these states of consciousness and we make them ours. And we ask, please hold our hands as we walk out into the world, shining our light, becoming living embodiments of these states of higher consciousness. And let's take a moment just to send our love and our blessings to the earth, to Mother Gaia and all the life she supports, especially all those who are in pain and suffering, the animals, ecosystems, and people, the whole of the natural world. We send light and love and blessings and healing energy. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. And so it is. Halalaho. May all of our thoughts, words, and actions in some way support the well-being and the happiness of all life on the planet. Thank you. Halalaho. All right, friends. Well, I love you and I wish you a Merry Christmas, a Happy Hanukkah, Happy Holidays, Happy New Year, Happy Solstice, and a very powerful 12-12 tomorrow. And I'll look forward to being with you on the inner planes as we all take advantage of this powerful, this window, this portal coming up. So I send you my love and looking forward to seeing you in the new year on the January call. All right. Lots of love, everybody. Bye for now.